From WXXI News, this is Connections. Evan Dawson has the week off. I'm Scott Feibusch. International trade is big business in upstate New York, and local businesses are hoping to get even bigger. Against a backdrop of national news about U.S. trade deals, Greater Rochester Enterprise will gather area businesses and trade experts on Thursday for the Upstate New York Trade Conference. This hour, we're joined by GRE President and CEO Mark Peterson, Leah George, GRE's Managing Director for International Trade, and two of the area businesses that will be at the summit. John DeLuca is the International Sales Manager for Liberty Pumps, and Scott Bass is the President of Advanced Language Translation. Thank you, everyone, for being with us this hour on Connections. We want to welcome you into the conversation as well. You can give us a call at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or you can tweet me at Scott Feibusch. Let's get started by putting this in some context, and we'll start with you, Mark. How big is international business in Rochester? Give us a sense of the scale of what we're talking about here.
Well, international trade in the greater Rochester region is almost $9 billion annually. So it's an enormous thing. We actually are a very, very heavy trade-oriented region. And for a region this size, it's almost amazing. We're one of the top regions per capita for trade in the United States. And I think part of that came out of our history with the big three in the past. But now so much of trade is small and medium-sized companies that really are acting globally, even though they are local.
Absolutely. Can you give us a sense of where the trend lines are going? Is this is a growing area still?
Absolutely, and that's just to follow up on what Mark said. That's really the whole point of the conference on Thursday, is to help those small to mid-sized businesses, which are really the backbone of our economy now, grow. I mean, that's part of GRE's mission, helping companies come here, business attraction, and keeping the ones that are here and growing. And part of that growth comes through international trade, through connecting them with key government partners who can help reduce some of the risk through their programs and funding, which John can talk about very well. He's taking advantage of any of the ones that are out there, really, as well as experts like John DeLuca from Liberty Pumps, Scott Bass from Advanced Language Translation, to really help companies understand what some of the pitfalls are that they may experience, because honestly, when it comes to international trade, you don't know what you don't know until you find yourself in that position.
Absolutely. Well, John, let's get right to you then. Tell us a little bit about what you do internationally and where you're hoping to get more information out of the summit and some of what you've learned.
Sure. Thank you. Liberty Pumps has been in the international market now for about 5 years. Prior to that, we sold basically in North America, the U.S. and Canada. And what we're doing now is trying to find distribution in all of the global markets that exist for our products. We sell pumps, dewatering pumps and sewage pumps and grinder pumps. And my job is going around the world working with these various countries and marketplaces to find distribution for the pumps. I've been aided quite a bit by both federal and state agencies that have allowed us, services that sometimes I find are hidden resources when I talk to my colleagues. They just don't know about them. But that's one of the things we hope to accomplish at the trade conference. I'll be speaking with both a federal and a state agency who will then, you know, describe how they can help a local company looking to get into the international market. And then I'm going to present at the end of that and show them exactly some real examples of what we've done at Liberty Pumps.
Give me some real-world examples, then. What are some of the things, like Leah mentioned, that you didn't know going into this?
Well, for example, I just returned from France, and that's a market that, you know, is high on our radar, one of the largest economies in Europe. And, you know, it's a kind of a daunting task. How do I go to France? How do I find distribution there? And I'm working with the Empire State Development Organization, who have an office in Europe. And the office in Europe has a trade consultant in France. And that individual was able to, size the market, give us a list of about 25 potential distributors, From there, we did our due diligence, narrowed it down to about five or six. And then he went ahead and set all the appointments for us so that when I landed in France, we were able to get in a car and go and visit each one of these potential distributors who'd been completely vetted. And I didn't have to guess or wonder, you know, what their viability would be as a partner for Liberty Pumps. That whole service is free. And in addition to that, I applied for EMAS, which is the Empire Marketing Assistance Service, and was awarded a STEP grant. And the STEP grant is given to, you know, small, medium-sized companies wishing to penetrate a market. And so Liberty Pumps received a $2,000 award to make this happen. So not only did they facilitate the actual logistics, but they helped fund the project too.
STEP, State Trade Export Promotion.
There you go. There we go.
Oh, good.
The world of alphabets.
Got to be sure we get that acronym in there.
Right.
So people know what we're
talking
about.
That's right.
As long as we're talking about these programs, Mark, it's something that is free to John. Where is that actually funded from?
Well, it's funded out of the state. So, I mean, the reality is that these are state taxpayer dollars that are designed to give back. I know there's frequently criticism and some of it deserved when the government doesn't do enough to help businesses. But the reality is that this is an occasion where there are good programs. Obviously, Governor Cuomo has made Global New York an initiative. He's really focused on helping companies to expand their international presence. And they're putting their money where their mouth is. And, you know, the small grants are very helpful. Certainly, those are great and a nice surprise. But I think the logistical support when you're in a foreign land, you know, as it was described, is infinitely more important, because it is very, very unnerving to go into a new market where you don't really speak the language necessarily, you don't know who to trust. And we find that even with recruiting companies to our region, one of our goals is to bring a level of comfort and understanding to our region so that it isn't this big mystery. So I think if we take the mystery away from trade, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for local companies to grow.
Bien sûr, absolument.
Scott, going back to the conference, and again, John and Scott can talk to this as well. ESC International, obviously, like Mark mentioned, Global New York, the governor putting an emphasis on international trade. But we also have the U.S. Commerce Department, which has similar programs that can assist with market research and market entry. And then from the finance side, Export-Import Bank of the U.S., United States, SBA, all of the regional directors from all of those offices will be at the conference.
A great resource. Before I slip too deeply into my rusty high school French, I want to bring Scott into this.
Don't try it
because
on me,
that's,
Scott. Yeah. Not my language.
No, but it's your business, though.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about what you do and about where you fit into the international trade picture.
Yeah. My company helps companies communicate, quite frankly. We focus on written documentation, written content for our corporate clients. Basically, all those manuals and things that people like to say they never read but do need in the last minute when they want to know how to run a piece of equipment or fix it. Also, their websites, marketing materials. We do all of that work and all the technical work behind it for publishing and in over 35 languages.
So the more international trade there is, the greater the draw on you to provide
these
services.
Yeah, that's our working agenda here. But I'm really also just a big proponent of trade at this level. In the 25 years I've been in the Rochester region, I've really started the shift, going from all the activity out of the major corporations trickling down. This is where trickle down really does happen. Smaller companies are getting involved. They have to get into international trade sooner than ever before. It used to be grow your domestic market, then go abroad. That strategy is changing for companies.
So back in the days of the big three, you would have actually had, you know, there was a Kodak Canada division, and there was an enormous Kodak UK and a Xerox UK and all of that. These days, you know, if you're a small company like, say, Liberty Pumps, you can't necessarily afford to have a Liberty Pumps Canada and a Liberty Pumps Europe. How do you actually manage on a day-to-day basis then doing this kind of business with overseas clients, especially when they could just as easily presumably source a pump from within the EU or source a pump from within Canada? How do you distinguish yourself?
So, you know, technology has really kind of shrunk this market so that a person sitting in France or Sweden or South Africa can just as easily access you know, the knowledge base he needs to find the solution that he wants for his particular application with the pump. He then wants to source that. And so everything really kind of in my world is availability. And the trick, I think, to success in Liberty Pump's business is making sure that you have representation in as many of these markets as possible. So when they go out there and they look for availability, they jump right on your website and they say, where can I buy this? And the next thing you know, they're working with you just like if you're around the corner. That's how small the world has become with technology. So, you know, today we're working in a business located in Bergen, New York, and lo and behold, we're selling to 32 countries around the world, and, you know, it's a great thing.
The world certainly has gotten smaller. Has it gotten small enough? I mean, even domestically, are there disadvantages to being here with relatively limited air cargo and being a distance from ports, as opposed to, say, somebody who could ship right out of a Long Beach or ship right out of a New Jersey?
I don't find that to be the case. I'm sure I'm going to bump my forehead on that one day. But actually, you know, we have a lot of excess in this area. All of the logistical firms that exist in our region are really tuned into international trade. And probably more so do we have this resource here than you'll find in a lot of other parts of the world. You know, if you're out in Kansas, it might not be like it is here in Rochester.
And Scott, like Mark said at the very beginning, part of that infrastructure and the talent that exists is, again, because of the big three that existed. I mean, good old Georgie was exporting and importing back in the 1800s, so we do have that capability.
Well, and for a community this size, we have three foreign trade zones. And so what that allows you to do is to have product basically clear and not have to re-clear when it gets on a boat and is going to be shipped or any of those kinds of things. And I think a lot of what we're talking about too is you establish a distribution channel in that foreign country, assumably have some level of inventory available there so they can order it and it's as though they shipped it from across town. And it really does look like a really small world that way. And it is largely driven by technology that's only taking the pace of this up faster and faster every day.
Sure. I mean, 3 short years ago, we never would have thought it, but today, Liberty Pumps is a free trade zone, the first in Genesee County. And we have inventory in Latin America, in Medellin, Colombia, in a free trade zone. So these are the kinds of tools and things that exist out there. And the trade conference is going to show everybody how do you do these things. And, you know, we've capitalized on that, and it's greatly increased our international revenue.
I was going to ask, the movement internationally seems to be very much towards just-in-time models of delivery, which would seem to be the opposite of putting something in a warehouse, especially thousands of miles away. But you're finding that works for you?
Sure. I mean, from Colombia, not only can we service the market in Colombia, but that logistics company can ship anywhere in Latin America probably within 24 hours. We're not exactly doing that today. We're just starting with our first step in Colombia. But that's the kind of potential that exists out there so that you can look like, you know, you're in that country and ready to go.
Mm-hmm. What percentage, if you had to try to put a number on it, what percentage of Liberty's business now is outside the U.S.?
Well, if you include Canada, well over 20%.
We will talk more about Canada coming up. We want to go to the phones at 844-295-TALK. As you're listening to a discussion of international trade here on Connections, we go to Don in East Rochester. Hi, Don.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. This discussion about international trade, I think, overlooks two or three big elephants in the room. The first elephant is that when you have a country like Vietnam or I know China's not in the TPP, but China and a few other nations, the big attraction there is low wages, and that encourages U.S. and European and other corporations to go there and make a huge profit on lower wages than they would in the United States. The second big elephant in the room is that these agreements set up, I suppose you would call them tribunals, for large corporations to go to and say that a certain nation is denying our ability to make a profit. I don't know why nations would want to give up their sovereignty to some kind of international trade agreement that's being worked out. The third elephant in the room is that our elected representatives don't even get to know what's being discussed in these negotiations. That it's totally oblique. They cannot go in there and find out what is going on. So with the lure of lower wages overseas, secondly, that nations are giving up their sovereignty to multinational corporations, and thirdly, that our elected representatives cannot find out what is going on in these discussions. Can any of your guests comment on those things?
A lot to chew on, Don, but thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's start, I guess, with this question of wages, and it plays in also the New York Fed was just out today with their monthly survey, and they put out a supplemental survey saying that as the labor market tightens, that businesses here and across obviously the larger area that they serve beyond upstate New York are more inclined to increase pay. They said 44% of service sector respondents, 34% manufacturing said they intended to increase employment and that they feel they've got to pay more now to get who they want. And that goes even beyond where we are now with discussions of raising minimum wage. How do we compete wage-wise? Because obviously, you know, we're paying a lot more for labor here, as Don said, than you would in a lot of countries that are doing the same kind of manufacturing around the world.
Well, obviously, wages are a factor, and that we've heard for 20 years, you know, the amount of offshoring that has been done. It's just good business in some cases for some of these companies to do that. Having said that, what we're finding more and more is companies that have had large international operations because of technology, because of the way they can do business now and the logistical support and even the cost of shipping product back and forth. There's actually a lot of those jobs that are coming back to the United States. More stability, you know, better opportunities and use of technology are allowing them to do that. So I don't think we're going to see companies not have some presence internationally, and I'm not sure that we want to. It sort of creates some level of political stability when, you know, companies from our market have business interests in those other emerging markets. But the reality is that overall, all the statistics will demonstrate that international trade and going back and forth creates more stability, creates more profit, not just for those American companies, but for those countries themselves as well.
You're nodding your head there, John. Do you?
Absolutely. I mean, Liberty is probably quite a bit different than your average company out there. Thanks to Charlie Cook, who's our president, he shot that elephant a long time ago. We don't find the prospect of taking our manufacturing and offshoring it something that is core to our business ethics. We feel that the innovation and quality we put into our products are going to allow us to build here in Bergen, New York, and sell around the world. And in fact, we do that. Our fastest growing international market is China. Mm-hmm. I've been in China and I've looked at you know, specifications on big jobs, and the Chinese local government will actually specify no Chinese pumps.
Really?
Because they know that inexpensive labor is building an inexpensive pump that just doesn't seem to work all that well.
Yeah. I've had, there's been a rush of Facebook friends who have been fixing their air conditioners lately, and all these complaints out there now about the Chinese capacitors that are being used in a lot of AC repairs, and that's exactly that sort of thing. Scott, I want to bring you back in here, because obviously it's very easy and expensive. I need something translated very cheaply. There are a lot of places overseas that I can go and at least get it done maybe quickly and cheaply, yeah, if not necessarily well. How does that work with your business?
Well, yeah, that we're absolutely, you know, tied into this issue directly. I mean, we see price pressure all around the world because our service is very portable, very fungible. And we're a communication service. And if you look at the history of communication costs over the last century, they historically trend downwards. And written translation is no different. And technology has an impact, but these markets have an impact. And the truth of the matter is that, yes, there are many parts of the world where certain jobs can be done more cheaply. And as a company, you have to decide, does that make sense for us? It's a strategic decision. You know, overall, you're looking at the overall value you can provide to your customers. And it's a strategic decision. And on the human side of the equation, you know, these are good jobs in these developing markets. And, you know, it's really to think we can hold on to all the labor that we want in the U.S. for as long as we want while prices are, you know, continue to impact, you know, trade. That's a bit, I find it a little naive. This is just a fact of being in a global economy, is that, that labor costs are going to go down.
Having said that, I want to also kind of raise the question. I mean, there's the slogan that we had as a civic slogan for so many years, Rochester made means quality.
Mm-hmm.
And there is at least sort of, you know, at least on an artisan side of things, this movement where it's big again to say, okay, I want to buy something that's actually made in the U.S. that's not necessarily coming in from overseas. Does that have implications beyond niche areas of commerce?
Well, sure it does, because, I mean, we're also in a much more high technology world, okay? And so the connectivity between research and development and the intellectual property itself and controlling that intellectual property and the quality output, that's something a lot of countries, while they may have lower labor, they haven't quite mastered that piece. That doesn't mean they don't sometimes make quality products in certain areas, but the reality is that many of the highest quality programs, like Liberty Punts is a perfect example, they want high quality. They want it to be done at a market where, quite frankly, wages were higher and the R&D was done and the quality is not compromised. And so I think those are the best jobs. Those are the ones we really want. I mean, if you're talking about something that's a commodity, we're just going to pump out a bunch of widgets, those probably aren't the greatest jobs for the United States market anymore anyway, because they don't produce the kind of wages that really grow an economy. So I'm real comfortable with the role that we play in the United States in the global market, in the international. And if we can get those other audiences, those other international markets to grow faster, we'll have more people to buy our products and move up the value chain. So it's good for everybody in the end.
And at a very basic level, these free trade agreements help level the playing field in terms of tariffs and taxes. Liberty Pumps is smart. They're leveraging foreign trade zones right now. But if you want to keep those pumps produced and made here and sold into foreign markets without pricing yourself out of that market, these free trade agreements help level that playing field.
That is a huge conversation, which we will continue right after the break. We are talking international trade with representatives from Greater Rochester Enterprise and several local businesses as well, ahead of the Upstate New York Trade Summit, which will take place on Thursday, June 18th. We'll talk more about the event itself coming up right after the break. You're listening to Connections on member-supported public radio, AM 1370, FM 88.5 in Rochester, and 89.5 in the Finger Lakes, and on WXXI.org. We'll be right back. Coming up in our second hour, reporting that takes a deep dive into databases, goes on the trail of cold cases, and asks questions that some people might not want answered. What's the state of investigative reporting today? We'll talk with Democrat and Chronicle's Sean Lehman and WXXI Innovation Trail editor Matthew Leonard and you next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Cobblestone School, providing independent, progressive education for children pre-K through sixth grade. Cobblestone School, where children love to learn. To learn more or to schedule a tour, visit cobblestone.org.
We are back on Connections here on WXXI, WRUR, and WEOS. I'm Scott Feibusch. In with Evan Dawson, we are talking about international trade this hour, with Mark Peterson and Leah George from Greater Rochester Enterprise, John DeLuca, the International Sales Manager of Liberty Pumps, and Scott Bass, the President of Advanced Language Translation. And with you, too, if you're a business interested, perhaps, in sharing some of your stories of international trade or with questions about how to get involved, call us right now, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or you can tweet me, at Scott Feibusch. And let's get right to the topic that we were getting started right before the break, the international trade agreements that have been so much in headlines out of Washington for the last few days, and the role of our elected representatives from this region, what it is that you're looking for as businesses and as business leaders for them to be doing about this right now in Washington.
I think we're looking for them to do anything, because quite frankly, it doesn't seem that they'll do that. It seems to be turned into a political football. There certainly are issues with transparency, but the reality is, as Leah mentioned, I mean, these free trade agreements, while the details need to be worked out, are good for the United States. They're good for those other countries. This is a global marketplace. Trying to put that genie back in the bottle is never going to work. So what we need to do is try to position ourselves in order to be able to play the appropriate role in this world, and that is to open markets up and have prosperity generated globally, not just in the United States. But it's very bizarre when you get the amount of money that we're talking about here and we get our own Congress involved. Both sides of the aisle seem unable to not bring other issues unrelated to trade into a discussion about international trade. Mm-hmm.
Scott, you were mentioning during the break that you have some questions about the fast-track nature of trying to get this through.
Well, I'd say I like the idea of fast-track. You know, since the 70s, this has been in place, and it's been an important part for keeping out the cherry-pick kind of issues that Congress sometimes introduce. So I appreciate that piece of it. But the transparency, I think that's the one point that Don was making that I appreciate, is that, transparency is key. But if in the end the trade agreements are equitable, they can't obviously be one-sided at all in favor of the U.S. and protectionist for our labor force. They got to be equitable, and they have to do what Leah said, which is level the playing field and give us more access. I think if U.S. companies have accessed international markets on a fairly level playing field, we'll have success.
Go to the phones here. Gene in Rochester, you don't think there's a level playing field coming from this?
No, I don't. Thanks for taking my call. I'll just get right to some details on these proposed TPP things, which we would not even know if WikiLeaks had not released some of the details. The foreign companies, multinationals, can actually sue in even the United States if they feel that their profits have been damaged in any way. They call it expropriation. So if Medicare wanted to limit the cost of drugs, they could sue, and United States taxpayers would have to pay large reparations to multinationals. This has already happened under NAFTA. For example, in Mexico, when they denied a permit for a huge toxic dump, the Mexican government had to pay the company involved millions and millions of dollars. And a similar thing happened in Canada. It's very wide-ranging, possibly even hydrofracking. If there were rules against hydrofracking and a foreign company or a multinational decided that hurt their interests and could prove it with one of these completely extra-legal tribunals, which go completely outside the judicial systems of any of the countries, including the United States. Just three panel judges, in which one of the judges would be from the company involved, and he doesn't also have to have any conflict of interest. He can continue to advocate for the company and still be a judge. These things are not just an attack on sovereignty of the other countries on the United States, but most of all, they're handing this huge amount of power to multinationals. Most of them are much bigger than, I think, the companies that are represented here today.
All right, Gene, I want to give our guests here a chance to respond to that. Interesting points. Thank you for that call. How much of this, if you're a company making pumps in Bergen, how much of this is a real concern for somebody just getting into international trade on a local level?
I would say that if I look at these trade agreements, I look at them more simplistically. You know, are they going to be able to, you know, increase my availability of a foreign market? Are they going to allow me to compete on a level basis in that country with their domestic product? And we face challenges there. If you look at us trying to get into Brazil, by the time the tariff laws are implemented, my product to import costs as much as typically we sell it due to the markups on tariffs. So if you can level that field, I'm going to be able to sell more product there. Also, the country in question is going to have to be more competitive. They're going to have to up their ability to sustain quality, to sustain innovation. So the whole momentum in a market has to increase and get better and better and better for the consumer. So I think the consumer in the long run will benefit. And individually, will there be some countries that have to adjust and use internal resources and monies to become, you know, a world-class company? Probably so. As far as the tribunals go, I can see that. You know, these large multinationals will just use this as another sword or a club or a shield in their armor to beat each other. And if it's not this, it'll be something else. They're not going to stop whether this is implemented or not. They will continue to have those battles.
Yeah, I mean, I think generally everybody around this table is positive about free trade and positive about levering the playing field and opening global markets. I think the downside is when you get into the nitty-gritty of some of these recent trade agreements, there are some things that are concerning. Any extra, you know, legal tribunals or any, you know, administrative function. I mean, we have this at every level in the United States, and you know, government is too invasive in parts of our work and our businesses, then we need to get them out of our back pocket. But the reality is, you know, that shouldn't water down all free trade. If this isn't the right agreement, good, let's not pass it, but let's still talk about how we do open those markets and how we do bring some balanced equation to globalization.
Are you concerned, anyone at the table, about this issue of secrecy, about lawmakers not even knowing necessarily everything that's in these deals as they're being pushed either to sign them or not?
Sure. I mean, I think any reasonable person would be concerned about that level of secrecy. And that I think that is, as I mentioned before, a bit of a weak point in fast-track type agreements. But at the same token, if you look at some of the things Gene mentioned, a lot of these agreements are reciprocal in nature. If there are clauses in the agreements that allow foreign companies to do this, I'm pretty sure it's also to protect the U.S. companies in foreign markets. So, you know, the sword does cut both ways in these agreements. That's why they're called agreements. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to be one-sided.
And the difference with the one that was being negotiated now in NAFTA is that, you know, 20 years ago, they didn't put in the enforcement aspect. So they couldn't really enforce whether or not these wages were being paid or the companies were held to this standard. Congress knew that now. They tried to work it in, and then they shot it down. But we know what needs to be in there.
All right. 844-295-8255, 844-295-TALK is how you join us with your opinion. You can also tweet me at Scott Feibusch. Bernard in Fairport, you're next on Connections.
Thank you. Nice to hear you again.
Good to hear you too, Bernard.
The question that I have, or the comment that I have, is that it's wonderful to talk about logistics and moving through international trade. And I've done international business for 30 years. To me, one of the things that you really have to understand, particularly, I guess, as a small or medium company, is ethics. Mm-hmm. You know, in the United States, we have business ethics, and we have laws and enforcement groups and so on and so forth. But when you do business in China, India, Middle East, and so on and so forth, it's a very different environment in terms of the ethics, what's legal, illegal, and so on. I mean, you know, think about the buildings that fall and kill 1,100 employees and the fact that food isn't good and so on and so forth. So it seems to me that one of the problems that a smaller, medium company has to deal with is, you know, logistics and the normal business stuff, but they also have to understand the ethics of how things are done. And in many of these countries that I've dealt with, bribing is pretty common. And lying is pretty common, and you have to learn to deal with that. So I'd be interested in, are you going to cover that in this conference, or are you basically going to ignore it?
I'm curious, Bernard, before I toss this out to the panel to get their thoughts on this, what line of business were you in that you experienced this?
I was in the computer business. I did projects, and I did projects in the Middle East. And in fact, one company I won't mention, When you did projects in the Middle East, you actually dealt through Italy because the Italians had the culture, if you will, to deal with lying, cheating, and bribing to do business in the Middle East. And I think that's, you can laugh or think that it's not important, but for a small or medium company, I don't know how, they have to at least be aware of it and be prepared to deal with it.
Absolutely.
That's my point.
Thanks for the call, Bernard. I'll put that out there. Of course, in the U.S. too, there are laws that actually restrict the ability, even if you wanted to pay a bribe.
Right.
You've got U.S. law that at least in theory prevents you from that. So I'll get some response to Bernard's interesting point there.
Good old foreign corrupt practices. Yeah. Just to answer your question, of course we'll be covering that at the conference. The program for this conference, so that everyone is aware, was really put together by GRE's Trade Council, the Finger Lakes Global New York Work Group, obviously John DeLuca, Scott Bass are a part of that. This was put together by a great mix of manufacturers, service providers, government partners that really have the exact experiences you were just referring to. We sat around the table and we said, what do you wish you knew then? And what do you need to know now? And that's what this conference covers. And so based on feedback from some of the exporters and importers within our community, we identified regions of interest. So some of the biggest markets currently for export and those that they're looking to get into include Canada, Asia in general, and Europe. And so we have four tracks at the conference, and one of our tracks is called Opportunities. And exactly like John was saying, he'll be presenting in the Canadian track alongside government partners from the state and from the federal government. We will also have two people, one from GEMCOR, one from Arnold Magnetic. They call themselves Road Warriors of the Orient. They've been back and forth and done business in Asia so many times and had to deal with the exact issues you've been talking about. So they'll be discussing some of their anecdotes, some of their lessons learned, some insight into dealing with corruption, just like you talked about, and then as well as Europe, a representative locally here from Harris, and then a firm out of the Netherlands that helps with business development in Europe, talking about it there. But John, I know you've come up against this as well, if you want to weigh in.
Oh, yeah. In fact, recently we just had an ethical challenge. And again, it was in Colombia. Colombia changed a law recently to strengthen their import of manufactured products that are electrical in nature, like our pumps. And the idea was, so many people were claiming that they weren't made in China. And the gist of the law change was you really need to prove where you're from. And if you claim you have a certain certification, you really need to prove that, because other people would say, oh yeah, I'm from Italy. You know, someone was picking on Italy here recently. Or, yeah, I've got that certification. Here's a piece of paper, you know, because I printed it off last night. And so our products were challenged. And David Morales just had a fight trying to get these products approved. And we went back and forth. We had the support of our engineers. And it wasn't just a few days or a week or something. We were at this a couple of months. And there was no doubt that in this process, the government agency we were working with, if we had walked in with a sack of money, that things would have moved along quite nicely. But we didn't do that, you know. And after they asked us 101 questions and we answered it with 101 answers, they realized, okay, you know, we probably should move along on this, because these folks are just going to be straight up about it. And you have to have the ethics and the fortitude to do that, because it's easy to fall into these traps. And, you know, you think it won't hurt, or just a little bit of grease on the wheel will get you where you want to go. And, you know, you just have to steadfastly say, not me, not now.
Get right on a slippery slope there.
Right.
I imagine, too, with certifications, if, you know, there are products coming out of, let's say, Asia that claim to be ROHS certified, or that may or may not actually be. Scott, I want to get your input on this.
Yeah, too. My take on the whole ethics side is, and tying it to free trade again, is that one of the benefits of free trade is that it exposes a lot of these issues. And this is where the U.S. can really lead, because we have a very strong legal infrastructure for this. And doing business about doing business ethically, and you know, it's like just turning your back on the neighbor who tosses trash on your lawn. You know, it's bad for the neighborhood. So you have to engage if you want to see improvement and you want to see proper ethics in place. Then be involved in global trade. Don't sit on the sideline.
Right.
We had kind of brought up earlier on in the conversation the issue specifically of Canada, and if we may not be perfectly situated, let's say, to trade with Asia, you certainly couldn't be in a better place, except maybe Buffalo, when it comes to having proximity to that huge population base right across the border. What specifically, as you had mentioned, John, that was the first area that Liberty Pumps reached out to is Canada, sort of the natural progression. What are some of the things specifically if someone says, you know, I'm not quite ready to do business in Asia and Europe, but I sure would like to tap the Canadian market. What should businesses be thinking about? What lessons have you learned?
Well, you know, our history, not that I was here through the whole history with Liberty Pumps, but, you know, when they we were selling into Canada kind of in a very informal way. We were using a representative there to be our importer. Volumes were not high. And NAFTA came into effect. We then moved to a cross-border logistics company. Took us about 3 or 4 years to get that underneath our belt. But then with the change in the law, we were able to become a non-resident importer in Canada, which allowed us great access in logistics, bringing our product to market. And from that time on, our Canadian revenue just increased, you know, almost geometrically. So I would say, you know, go to your government agency, you know, work with, you know, that cross-border team. Get yourself positioned. You don't have to go put the storefront sign in Canada. That's one of the nice things about NAFTA. You can trade freely up there. You can be a non-resident importer, and all of a sudden, you know, you're trading as freely in Canada as you are in Pennsylvania.
You're listening to Connections from member-supported public radio. We're talking with John DeLuca from Liberty Pumps and Scott Bass from Advanced Language Translation and Leah George and Mark Peterson from Greater Rochester Enterprise. The trade conference is coming up on Thursday. I know the official end of registration was June 11th. Is it still possible if people are interested and want to come?
Name, Bernard.
Is there still room, though, if other people are interested, or are we...
Today only.
today only.
Everyone back at the office will kill me. I hope they're not listening.
I want to ask, one of the threads that that you're going to be doing during the conference is food and beverage export. What from Rochester, you know, are we sending garbage plates to Asia?
That's an idea.
Well, obviously, Mark can certainly speak to the growth in the food and beverage manufacturing here in Rochester, but that's clearly a growing market, a growing opportunity.
Yeah, it's a growing opportunity because not only do we have tremendous assets in this community in agriculture and food production, you know, everything from wineries to dairy to, you know, what we have, but it is different in those other markets. I mean, one good thing about food is everybody has to eat. And globalization means there's a lot more opportunities for people to want food that they used to be familiar with in their home country, want it here, and vice versa. So you've seen the explosion in Greek yogurt, for example. Well, you know, that was a pretty commonplace thing in Europe, but it wasn't in the United States until just a few years ago. And so it's opened new markets for us here in the United States. But now the opportunity, especially in Canada, to share that. But Canada has their own unique, you know, economies, too. And so some things are easier to import when they're food into Canada than others. You know, they don't want to hurt their own market. So it's complicated. But I see that certainly as a huge export, a growing export, certainly out of our region is food.
And another area where you're going to have resources on hand and experts who can help guide businesses through that.
Well, it's also because of the changing economy. Some of these economies now, I mean, there's a huge effort right now to ship wine from the Finger Lakes region into China. Why? Because the Chinese market's developing, you know, an elite and a group of middle class people who like wine from all over the world. So there's a new opportunity for us to ship products over there, but it's very different.
Is that too? I mean, this was once, if you said to somebody pretty much anywhere in the world, Rochester, they would have known the big three. They would have known mm-hmm. Kodak. They would have mm-hmm. known Xerox. As this kind of, you know, blossoms out into smaller companies doing this, what are the selling points? If you go to some place that doesn't necessarily know Rochester, what are you selling?
Well, I think we're selling, we have a very talented pool of people here. I think we're well known for our colleges and universities, for our healthcare. But we're also world leaders in things like optics and photonics that, yeah, partly spun out of those big three, but there's a ton of small companies doing worldwide business there. Food, obviously, is a big play for us. And, you know, now when you start to shine spotlight on things like cultural things like the Jazz Fest and things like that, you know, we're really starting to be no longer a stop-through, but a main destination for a lot of people to come and visit, too.
We just had Mark Iacona in here yesterday talking about the international visitors who make this stuff. We've got time for at least one more phone call here on Connections. Bonnie in Rochester.
Yeah, hi. Some of the conversation has kind of in a categorized way deal with, you know, protections of valid protections, ethics, and all that kind of stuff. And some of it seems to me it boils down to, you know, again, who has power, who has some authority. And one of the things that's been left out of the conversation is the unfortunate decline of unions. And the unions and union movements, labor movements, have traditionally been one of those forces at the worksite and beyond to serve as one of those power balances on what's really going on. And I think because it often operates from a more grassroots base, in other words, where the action or where the work is actually happening, it has a lot of potential validity. But it's, to me, that's one of the problems right now. The countries that don't have very strong unions and our own country that has been declining. So that voice that's really needed as a more, shall we say, totally independent, but another honest voice is in decline. And I think that's a real serious problem.
Thanks for the call, Bonnie.
Well, I think one of the things that you've seen changed with international trade, and you know, I think Bonnie's right, but the reality is that a lot of these companies now are not these big. I mean, we've talked about some of the big multinationals, but they're not all big multinationals. They're companies like Liberty Pumps, and there are companies that are not giant mega companies, but they're doing business in, you know, dozens and dozens of international markets, and they have a family presence. They care about their employees. They care about what's going on. And so, you know, in those cases, they're not going to do things. You heard it described, you know, how you deal with certain ethical issues. So I think these are all things we should be talking about, but I don't think it's, you know, all about, especially in international trade, you know, the powerful unions need to fight against the giant multinationals. I mean, I saw that movie, but that was from 1970. And, you know, we're in a different world now. You know, this is a globalized community. We are doing business with one another, and smart business with good ethics is going to continue to grow and win the day over time. Well, we just need to be smart about how we're engaging and learning about the different cultures that we're involved in.
And that's really what this conference is all about. It's really about helping those good, small to mid-sized, homegrown companies grow, thrive, be successful, be ethical, understand what they're going to run up against. I can't say it enough. The Trade Council, the Global New York Work Group, they did the homework for you. If you come here, you will meet the people that you don't even know that you're going to need to know 6 months from now. And this is the only conference like it in the state, and it only happens once a year. So
yeah, I'm a big advocate.
I got the water. Where's your horse?
I can tell Leah, the former journalist in you, is coming out and trying to write the lead to this.
It's so frustrating sometimes. We want to help.
You know you want to do it.
I'm a big advocate of, you know, of being prepared. I'm a big advocate for companies taking a strategic approach to international trade the way Liberty Pumps has. They've attacked it. You know, they're really a great example. We hold John has to present so much because their company is such a great example of how to do it right as a small company. But the point is, if you're doing business and you have a website, you are international already, if you like it or not.
Right.
Someone is going to find your product and write you a letter in Polish, and you're going to wonder what to do with it. And you can either say, I'll pass on this opportunity and move on with my life and just pretend I only live in the United States and only work in the United States. That's your prerogative. But if you do want to grow and you do want to take on new challenges, then really you have no choice but to become oriented to the global market.
Well put. I want to ask in our last minute or so here, getting back to that labor question, can Scott or John, can either of you point to jobs that exist now that wouldn't have existed because of before international trade became part of what you do?
Oh, absolutely. At Liberty Pumps, like I mentioned earlier, if you look at our total international revenue, it's over 20% of our company. And Liberty has been fortunate to have a very strong growth rate. In fact, it's our 50th year anniversary this year, and we're doubling the size of our factory. And that's jobs and opportunities locally.
And presumably good-paying jobs.
Good-paying jobs.
What are you finding, real quickly, because we're right down to the last minute here, in terms of the availability of labor?
Good labor is hard to find. You got to search.
We'll have to end it on that note. The Upstate New York Trade Conference takes place on Thursday at Temple Beth Kodesh through Greater Rochester Enterprise. I want to thank our guests from GRE, Leah George, the Managing Director for International Trade, and President and CEO Mark Peterson, John DeLuca from Liberty Pumps, and Scott Bass from Advanced Language Translation. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We will continue next hour talking about investigative journalism. I'm Scott Feibusch. This is Connections from member-supported public radio.